welcome to the sanctuary, a safe space to speak from the heart. I'm your host, Israel. Today, I'll be dying to this talk. Documentary filmmaker, content creator, all-round super cool human being, Matt. Thanks for coming to the sanctuary today.
Thank you for having me, Israel.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's I love talking to you, and I love how you kind of like break things down. And I think like the partnership you have with your partner Chelsea and the content you create, and you're like, oh wait, it makes sense because he makes documentary. I get it now. So like, how did you like? Did you always want to make documentary, or how did you get it? Like, where did the love for filmmaking and documentary filmmaking specifically start from?
Sure. Yeah. So I guess you can say like, right now I'm shooting adult content with my partner CCB or Chelsea B, and I'm sure you'll let everyone know what that handle is. But yeah, then going back, I started my career in fiction filmmaking. So I went to film school. I learned the Hollywood method of making films, and I was very disenchanted immediately just by like the amount of abuse that people have to go through to get a little bit of the pie in Hollywood. And it was very romanticized, the way that people are sort of just emotionally abused around LA. And I thought there would be more than that. You know, I worked my butt off through undergrad. I'm like, there has to be more to life than just putting up with this. So I lived abroad for a while. I did some international development. And when I came back to the States, I chose to live in New York City, go through a graduate program for documentary filmmaking. It was a hybrid program between like media and anthropology and video production. Video production by then, I already knew very well. I got involved in event videography in 2010, right in the middle of the global recession that happened. As it turns out, people still get married in a global recession. So I learned very quickly how to adapt. And I didn't go to school for videography necessarily or cinematography. I went to school for narrative film directing. But you're in the middle of a global recession. I'm not going to be there standing there being like, well, I don't want the money because I went to film school as a director. Right. I'm like, no, give me the freaking cash. I'll learn how to do this on the fly. Yeah. Which, you know, I guess that is akin to a lot of people being forced into a situation and having to adapt. I think a lot of, not to say I'm like successful, quote unquote, but I think a lot of successful people do find themselves trapped in a corner and they have to adapt. Mm-hmm. And just like the recession, there, you know, came COVID and a lot of people who then decided that they were going to be amateur porn stars. So, you know, kind of make that analogous as well. And now today we're sort of in an AI revolution and people are going to have to adapt even more, but that's a little bit off topic.
No, I think, you know, something that came out of that is that adaptation. Like, was that something that, or is that something that comes easily to you, adapting?
Adapting? I don't have any other choice. I mean, I've adapted so many times. I've adapted from film directing to event filmmaking to international development, learning how to take my skills as a producer, learning how to budget for other projects, then going into grad school and having to like learn anthropology amongst all these PhD candidates. But you know, unlike those PhD candidates, none of them knew how to sit in a room with a camera. So, right. You know, they came to me for that. So, you know, it's just, I get tired very quickly, but there's never been a time where I've just given up. And COVID was like, okay, I have to learn how to live stream now. But there's already companies that know how to live stream that began before COVID. They're already the experts for that. So I try to get a little bit in, you know, like give me 10% of that pie. I know that I didn't start as a live streamer, but, you know, I adapted. Maybe if I can get 10% of the event filmmaking pie, 10% of the content creator. So it's just like taking just the little slices here and there, knowing that, you know, that industry might collapse and then you have to go to another one and such and such.
Wow. Yeah, that's a really good outlook on life because I think some people give up. Like if you kind of just roll into the thing that works, and it's like it's working, and then it's not working anymore. If you don't adapt, you're pretty much in trouble. And usually when things that some people are used to working a certain way stops working that way, they kind of freeze and they don't even know what to do. So adapting is a great way to like, okay, wait, it's not working anymore. Is there where I can, you know, maneuver and find something, what to do or how to handle this? So that's a very great approach.
Yeah. I mean, I know people in the middle of the pandemic, like what they do for their profession is they make sure that the image is in focus for television and feature films. Like that's their entire job. They don't know how to do sound. They don't know how to edit like that. They just pull. That's what it's called, pulling focus. Nothing else. So I empathize with, you know, people who just have such a narrow career, I guess. But now, I mean, I think, since then, you know, everyone's now a podcaster, everyone's now a content creator. People are adapting and they're learning that these like one track career paths are kind of on the way out. So I think everyone's catching up.
When you do your traveling, what are some of the countries you went to?
I'd actually rather not say, because the countries that I went to, me being a bisexual or pansexual male, I still have expat friends and local friends there. And so I'm in the closet with, my sexuality, in other parts of the world. So
see, that is, was that difficult to navigate versus being like back in the States?
It was a little bit hard to communicate because, you know, everything that I was feeling, the men who didn't have the privilege of relying on their attraction to the opposite sex or gender, that are truly gay men, didn't have the opportunity to hide behind that. So I'm very privileged in the fact that I could say, oh, I'm attracted to women, and go out and kind of live as, you know, sort of a DL life that way. And then obviously women have it just, you know, being catcalled and harassed constantly while traveling internationally. I can't speak much to them. So it was such a situation where I had to keep those things to myself.
Yeah.
Somewhat, or maybe I would, you know, rely on talking to people overseas when I had internet access and that kind of thing. So it was not necessarily anything that I could really communicate with anyone locally, either within my expat circle or just host country nationals either.
Okay, no, totally get that. And thanks for sharing that. But like, I guess, did you like know right away you were pan or bi? Like how early was that? Did that realization come to you?
Yeah, I felt like it's still an ongoing conversation with myself. But when I was, you know, 18 years old, I was in college, I was an undergrad, and I was dating this woman and we lost our virginity to each other. And we're like, oh my God, we're going to like spend the rest of our lives together. And this is it. This is like the person I'm going to be with. Right. And you're 18 and you're naive and you're like, you think you have it all figured out, and you don't, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But, so we were together for a couple of years. I'm 20 years old, and I know that she has a crush on this other guy in her cohort. And part of my brain was like, oh, you know, like, you know, crazy idea, right? Like, what happens if, you know, you sleep with this guy that I know you're kind of into? And her immediate reaction was like, oh my God, Matt's trying to dump me, and he's trying to throw me onto this other guy. And this is how he's breaking up with me. And I genuinely was like, you know, kind of like interested and excited by the taboo idea of sharing someone that I love so much. Mm-hmm. But I didn't quite know what that meant at the time. I didn't know like, oh, am I gay? Am I bisexual? Do I have a cuckold fetish? Do I like humiliation? Am I just interested in like group sex activities? I didn't know well at that point. And now I'm comfortable in saying like I do like people of all genders, but I'm also like a very quiet, like behind the scenes type of person. So I don't get out a lot to explore my sexuality a whole lot, but I'm very comfortable in knowing who I am at this point in my life. And I think the person that I am is I'm pansexual. I like opening up to my partner, but I'm not the kind of person who has to live the non-monogamous life 24/7. I just kind of like the option, and being told that I don't have the option, that's when I like, oh my God, I feel like I can't breathe. Like I just like living my life knowing that I have the option, and that is my brand of non-monogamy. And if that means that I am with someone else that's not my partner once a year, once every 2 years, or maybe not for a very long time, that's fine. I'm okay. I'm comfortable with that. But I, in my mind, still identify as non-monogamous. So that's kind of how the monogamy and also my sexuality kind of balance out.
And did you find, I guess, you know, having that blend easy to, I guess, navigate being in the States and like being in a place, well, I don't want to say welcoming, but at least understanding of the lifestyle?
Say that again?
Is it easier kind of accepting and living that lifestyle more in the States, in a place where people are at least a little bit more understanding or have an idea of what the lifestyle is?
That's why I like lived in New York City for 10 years, is because I went directly from living abroad to living in New York. And even I'm from Chicago, and Chicago at the time was not as accepting. It was still a lot of like unicorn hunting and like quote unquote straight couples that are trying to pick up chicks on Craigslist casual encounters or whatever it was like back 10, 15 years ago. Like that was sort of the thing, and it stayed that way in Chicago for a while. But in New York, there's just such a like a blend and a spectrum of sexual opportunity that it's a little smorgasbord of things to pick and choose from, a nice buffet, if you will. So I fell in love with New York for that reason, and more so than LA, because LA, again, was very much centered on like unicorn hunting, and it wasn't very as welcoming to queer and fluid men, if you will. And now actually, I think that Chicago's caught up a lot, and there's a lot more opportunity to explore as a queer man in Chicago than there was ever before. So that's nice to see. I'm not going to say that like things have stayed that way, but I've taken note, you know, and I think LA is still a very much like, I don't know where the good group hangs are in LA. It seems very stuffy, as if like it's like older men showing off their younger trophy wives kind of vibe.
Oh, right. Yeah. Gotcha.
I tell people, there's like different situations for every type of person, and I still feel like that's the primary thing out there, so I'm not into it. Elon Musk had accidentally went to a sex party, and he's like, I just thought it was a costume party. Those are the things I'm trying to avoid. If I go to a sex party and Elon is there, I know this party ain't for me. So that's what LA is.
Okay.
I know I fucked up.
I want to catch up in a little bit. What do you love about being behind the camera?
I like the picking and choosing what I get to control. So my personality in social situations is that, for example, like a play party or a sex party, we call them play parties because not everyone has to have sex, or sort of the PC term. So when I go to a play party, I like knowing that there's a room set aside for just mingling. I know there's a room set aside for sex. I know a room that there's set aside for BDSM and kink. I know that there's a room set aside for just like snacks, you know, or smoking or hanging out. So that's kind of where my profession comes in, is that when I'm behind the camera, I'm kind of picking and choosing the elements that I want to get involved with and also control. But I'm also there for Chelsea. I'm there for whatever other content creator that I'm shooting. So I'm helping amplify their message, their voice, their product, whatever it is. But I'm doing it in a way that doesn't give me a whole lot of anxiety. But I also like being in front of the camera too to support Chelsea so that she doesn't feel completely alone in the stress of having to be in front of the camera all the time. But I'm comfortable doing both. But the control part of directing, and not even like directly letting people know that I'm controlling the image or the message, but it's sort of like my own little my own little way of being dominant, I guess, like dominance through curating an image for other people kind of turns me on, I guess you could say. But,
yeah. So creating, you know, recording is one thing, but do you have a process when it comes to editing?
When it comes to editing, I edit mostly my own footage. I don't like editing other people's footage necessarily because I just spend so long on it. I don't know what they had in their mind when they were shooting. And sometimes they don't even know what they had in mind. And they're like, here, Matt, make this pretty. Like here. Or the one that I always get. It's not make this pretty. It's I done fucked up. Fix it.
I'm like, Oh, right. At least they're honest up front, right?
Sometimes they are. Sometimes they still think it's like the most brilliant thing that's ever been made. I'm like, all right, no, it's not. So when I am editing, it all comes down to how I'm shooting it. So I always am editing constantly in my head as I'm shooting an event. And sometimes these events are sex. So I know that, okay, I'm going to be on this side of a model shooting them. Doggy style, back forth. I'll do that for like a good couple of minutes, and then I'll switch and I'll get the opposite end, back forth. And it's very much in a rhythm and there's a tempo to it. So I know I can cut here, and then I can, you know, cut to my other angle that I ran over to this side about. And I know that I can cut on the frame in which the guy's cock was like in her completely. And then it just looks seamless. It looks like there are two people there. So those are the things, the patterns, the match editing techniques that I'm constantly doing in my head. So to be a good editor, you have to be a good shooter. And you have to know what to look for and how you're going to edit it later. So always going in prepared and with a game plan makes editing a lot easier, a lot more seamless, and a lot less noticeable for the audience to be engaged in whatever content it is that you are making.
So, I mean, you have the experience, you have the skills, you literally went to school for it. How did the transition from like being with your partner to, hey, let's create content together happen?
Oh, man, good question. So we when we first met, you know, she was like the person that wanted to try everything, and she had a lot of catching up to do. And she, I guess she was like waiting for someone like me to come around, and I was waiting for someone like her. So when we met, we were just like, oh, let's just do all the things all at once. And we were like busy during the work week. We were trying to arrange threesomes on a Wednesday. It was crazy. And so, you know, all the stuff. And when we were on like some of the swingery apps, there's more than one now. So there's a couple apps now that are like couples looking for couples looking for other single people. And we were on one of those apps, and we were always getting late night messages from like dudes, like husbands of, you know, it's like, hey, can we see some images of you and Chelsea, or some stuff with Chelsea in it, or, you know, like they're obviously out partying and they're sourcing free content to jerk off on, or like to share and be like, hey, let's try this thing that they're trying, or like let's one up them and see what kind of sexy content we can make and share with Matt and Chelsea. So we were making a lot of content for free, and you know, like my education, my experience, my equipment, my editing tools, and they're getting a lot of good quality content that other people aren't giving out because, you know, just my set of experiences and skills and my investment is different. And so they're getting like really good stuff for free, and I'm like, this is stupid, we should be charging people for it. And I was paying for the time, like I was paying for some content from other couples as well, and respecting that they put a price tag on it. So I understood the approach. I was being respectful, but I also had value to the stuff that I was making. And also a lot of it came with people who followed up asking about advice, asking about a lot of men who are very sexually curious, don't know how to explore themselves sexually in sex positive spaces. And I'm talking about like on the queer spectrum. So they see me, they see what I'm about. They see it says that I'm bisexual or flexible or whatever it is on my dating profile. Now they have all these questions. Now I'm giving them advice. Now it's like, I got to start a Patreon too, or something like that. And it happens in the virtual world, and it happens in real life. I frequent the same bars. People recognize my face, or I just have one of those faces that guys just are like, hey, it looks like you give good advice. And I'm like, I do give good advice. And it's a lot of me giving advice for free. It's a lot of me giving quality content for free. And then, you know, I'm underemployed because of the way that things are working out with the pandemic. I'm not doing full documentary work. Now I have to put a price tag on all this. What essentially becomes is like a consulting business. Mm-hmm. It's like a consulting and media making image business. and that's what it, you know. So that's how it came to be. That's how, and it was fun. It was fun making content with Chelsea. It's still fun making content with Chelsea. So it was an easy transition, but I think the market forces kind of spoke for me at that moment and kind of led me towards that path.
Yeah, so it's kind of an almost natural progression from, hey, we're already doing this, just tackle the being paid part for it.
Yes.
So I'm curious though, technically, like, do you have a specific, I guess, lens or cameras you love using when you're shooting?
I mean, technically speaking, I love the Sony Alpha series. I've been using the Sony Alpha series since 2015. I am on the A7S IIIs right now. I think that whatever camera people pick, they have to think about it. I know a lot of people don't have a choice because of money. But if you're going to invest in a nice camera, also think about the way, like, how intrusive is that camera? What are the ergonomics of that camera? How are you going to use a camera as a tool in a very intimate space? Because if you're going to have a big, giant shoulder rig, that can be very intimidating for amateur couples or people who are new to the industry. So I think a lot about the psychology of how I'm picking my lenses, picking the tools that I'm using, because the people who bring the giant rigs, giant stabilizers, there can be a minute difference between using the big ones and using the small ones, but the small ones give a different psychological attitude toward it. So you have to think about the comfortability of the other person on the other side of the lens as you're doing these things. Because when people pick the giant rigs, they're doing it for ego. It's a dick measuring contest for a lot of these men. They're like, they're literally like, that's how big your lens barrel is? Let me show you how big my lens barrel is. I'm like, this is literally a dick measuring contest, guys. Like, just pick the short, chody looking lens that's going to look beautiful later, and it's going to save you a lot of heartache and headache. And yeah, so I think the way that people pick equipment, it's not always like the biggest and the best. Sometimes it gets the job done really well, and it's just the right tool for the right moment.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to like cut a piece of paper with like a chainsaw, you know? It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. And people do really well just using their phone. And there's a different psychology behind that, because people think that they're getting like your personal cell phone pics, your personal cell phone videos. And that feels a little bit naughty and taboo too. So there are people who actually prefer the very amateur look of someone's phone. The lo-fi purpose look at that over the high quality 4K kind of look as well. So it just depends on who your audience is at the same time.
Yeah. Talking of techniques and all this, like with the podcast, why did you decide to start a podcast with Chelsea? And what's the process when it comes to podcasting?
Well, we were looking for a safer work project. So we know that people love posting like sketch comedy on Instagram and TikTok and channels like that, YouTube. And you can't do like porn on Instagram. You have to be very, very down low about all of that. So we were struggling for a while with what is our safer work project. She likes tattooing. She likes art. And she likes conversing with people and being an advocate, a social advocate, a health advocate, that kind of thing. So the podcasting came to be, she was resistant to it at first because she's like, oh, podcasting, we're just going to be two more white people, or not me, like me being in front of it was one more white person with a podcast. And she was struggling with it, trying to be like, she didn't know what quite her voice was at the time. So but I'm a documentary filmmaker. I'm used to interviewing people. I have all the equipment, and the stuff that I did need, it wasn't hard to invest in that. But yeah, it became just like a way of advocating for sex work and things that were close to her heart as well, so that we had some kind of project where you know, it just wasn't about sex. It could be about other things in addition to sex. And it created balance with all the porn work, because the porn work can be emotionally exhausting. It can be very exhausting, and it can be very exhausting for other creators. So when other creators come on, they kind of see it as like free therapy for them to have a moment, just like sit down for an hour and just like kind of let loose about things that are on their mind. And oftentimes it's like tips from, you know, as a female creator, men that are flooding my inbox, let me tell you what not to do, or maybe what to do more of that is working. So it's a great opportunity for them to like get free content that I'll edit later to like help their fans and help other collaborators kind of feel them out as what kind of creator they are. So it's a very like communal thing, and the whole project works as like this nice community base. And I kind of say like, hey, subscribe to our channel and get to know your community. The community, that the content that you're absorbing, the way that you're communicating with other people, if you're a collaborator, if you want to be a collaborator, this can be a hub and a resource for all these types of people involved to just, again, get to know the kind of product that you're consuming and the people behind it and how you can put good media out there in the world as well.
You know, this is leading me to actually think, I mean, with your skill sets, like, what advice would you give to someone that wants to shoot content? Like, what, I know it's unique for each person, but if you were to share some pointers, what should they look for? How do they, like, get good pictures when they are making content?
So, some quick tips on how to get some good images is what you're asking? Yes. So, the amateur things that I see is obviously a backlit, you know, something that's backlit. Something that's backlit, unless you're very purposely doing some sort of like stylistic boudoir shoot. I don't, you know, that's the first thing that you could tell is very amateur-y. When you're shooting video, the main amateur-y thing is the audio. Not understanding that there's an audio portion to the video that you're shooting. Audio is key because it's something that nobody notices when it's working well, but it's the first thing that people notice when it's not working. And it's completely unforgivable if you don't have the right audio, because you can fix up a bad image. You can say it's artistic. You have an artistic license and kind of lean into however you fuck that up. But when you fuck up audio, there's nothing that you can do to be like, no, I meant to do that. It's very avant-garde. It's like, no, I can't freaking hear anything. It's out of sync. It's not working. It's crackly. There's a hum. There's no artistic reason for that. Yeah. So definitely when you're making images, focus on audio and just think about where your light is coming from and always where your shadows are falling. And don't be afraid to like bring up the light levels in general, because when you have very low light settings, your camera is going to get very grainy. And people who are starting off on the image making side of things don't understand that kind of grain and that kind of visual noise until later on the edit. And then they're like, oh, I added more lights, and now everything looks more crisp. My guess, because the sensors have a little bit of wiggle room with the image that's trying to be exposed. So those are the quick ones. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's always great talking to you. It's very enlightening, eye-opening and stuff. So I want to say, any with this, like, you know, there's a queer man out there listening, watching this episode, and they're like, oh man, you're kind of like, you know, you're living your life happy, free, doing the things you want to do. Like, how could you, what advice would you share with this person?
Tell me who this person is. Who is this?
He's a queer man out there listening or watching this episode.
Yeah, so the person who has equipment out there that kind of wants to be a content creator themselves, like how to start with that. Yeah. I would say start with you have some stuff, you kind of know how to use it. Always approach people in a way that benefits them. When you start making stuff that just benefits you, no one's going to want to work with you. So when you say, hey, I have a collaboration idea, make it a true collaboration. But before you even approach anyone to ask, like, do your research on the model. What kind of content do they have out there? Where do you think you fit in? How can you help them go in a certain direction? If you want to go in a certain direction for your own personal portfolio, make sure it lines up with that model's portfolio as well. Don't be like, hey, I have a great scene, a great idea for a dungeon scene, when you're talking to someone who like only does like anime inspired kind of things. Like, really know their audience as much as your own audience, so that everyone feels full and that has properly contributed to the product that you are making. And also, before you do approach anybody, do like just solo things. You can do solo things with yourself that are properly and intentionally lit, but you can also just have a different kind of, just do like a photojournalistic type of city walk type of thing. Take images of birds, of animals. Show someone that you know how to use your equipment, you know how to set up a scene, you can shoot something in your living room, and you are cognizant enough to like not leave out the garbage that's in the corner. Or someone can be like, hey, this guy can shoot a scene, and he can think about what's actually in the frame.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that when I'm working with this person, they're gonna make some kind of amateur move by leaving the lens case out in the middle of the frame, or leaving light stands visible for everyone to see in the photos or the video. Just, you know, practice those amateur-y kind of things so that people will want to work with you and know that you are detail oriented.
Yeah. Matt, it's great talking to you. Thanks for the amazing things you and Chelsea are doing, and for sharing your knowledge today, and also for coming to the sanctuary.
Oh, thank you, Israel. I hope I gave some useful tips to other image makers out there.
You did.